I said. We will get you free, okay? But we can't do it yet. I remembered what Monty had told me. Don't forget your name, okay? Carl Donovan. Just hang in there. We'll be back for you real soon.
Hang in there,
echoed Donovan, smiling. His metallic eyes swung back and forth before finding me again, and I realized he was probably doped up on painkillers or something.
Good one, Alex. I'll just hang around right here.
Just think about that burger, okay, big guy? I went on. Simon was already squeezing between the back of the screen and the wall. Z hot on his heels and beckoning me on. I followed, Donovan's smile fading as he watched me go.
Alex, don't leave me.
I'll be back, I promise. We're just down the hall. We're not going far. I reached the wall, Donovan trying to twist his neck around to watch me. This time it felt as though my heart had been crushed, but I had no choice. On my life, I swear to you, I'm not going anywhere without you. Then I ducked past the screen, Donovan's great heaving sobs following me all the way. Abandoned. I don't know what was more of a relief, the fact that there was enough room for us to pass through the dozen or so cubicles without difficulty, or the fact that only one of the beds was occupied. It was the next, but one from Donovan's, a kid a few years younger than me. He was awake and uninjured, his body strapped down and covered with a sheet, but his mind was obviously in a better place than this, his pale blue eyes barely even acknowledging us as we passed by. I wanted more than anything to free him, take him with us, take them all with us. For a fleeting moment, I pictured myself running out and fighting the Weezers, tearing off their masks, felling the black suits with a single blow, then smashing my way up to the surface with all the lost boys of Furnace in my wake. But even as I thought it, I realized how pathetic it sounded, and instead followed Simon and Z as they eased around the bed, my body slumped, heavy, useless. Not before I noticed another trolley of equipment, however, a torturer's kit of stainless steel lying by the boys' bed, all sharpened blades and hooks and clamps. Instinctively, I lifted a scalpel from the tray, sliding it into the waistband of my overalls as we squeezed through the gaps left by the last few screens. We emerged against the wall we'd come in through, the main door visible maybe 5 meters away. Simon crept to the end of the screen, easing himself around the corner to check the infirmary before turning back to us.
"Weezers have gone," he whispered. "Must be in the cubicles or something. Follow me and keep quiet."
We did as we were told, jogging across the polished floor. The plastic curtain of the infirmary slapped shut behind us, imitating the soft patter of our feet as we made our way back to solitary. It was as we reached the junction that led back to our cells that we heard voices, too deep, too loud to be anything other than black suits. Simon cursed, his pace quickening.
"I thought we'd have more time," he said, bending down to flip open Z's door as if it weighed nothing. "Get in."
Z looked reluctant, but he didn't argue, vanishing once again into the gloom. The voices were getting louder, and I recognized the growl of the dogs too. I didn't particularly fancy another eternity locked in the hole, but there was nothing else for it. I nodded at Simon as he held open my hatch for me like a butler. Then I jumped in. He paused before closing it.
"I'm sorry about your friend," he said. "I hope you understand why I did it. He's gone, Alex. He's turned. Next time I come, we focus on getting out, okay?"
He didn't wait for me to reply, just eased down the hatch, then slowly slid the lever across. It was only seconds after the sound of his feet faded that I heard the familiar stomp of the black suits. There was the squeal of a lever, and I thought I could make out a shout of distress, then a dull thump. Someone else must have been brought into solitary, some other poor soul banished to the hole to be tortured by his own demons. I wondered who it was, whether I knew him. It was probably a gang member from Gen Pop, one of the Skulls or 59ers, punished for trying to break out. I listened to see if I could hear anything, but the solid walls did their job well, immersing me in lightless silence. I slid the scalpel from my overalls and tentatively felt the blade. It was wickedly sharp, the faintest touch leaving a hairline cut on my skin that wasn't deep enough to bleed, but which stung nonetheless. I didn't really know what I could use it for. It was too small to leave more than a scratch on a black suit, and sure as hell wasn't going to let me tunnel my way free. But it felt good to have it, made me feel a little less feeble in the face of Furnace. Tucking it in the corner of my cell where I wouldn't accidentally slice my hand off, I curled up on the floor, too exhausted to do anything else. We'd only been in the infirmary for a few minutes, but it seemed like hours, every sick detail carved into my brain. I saw Gary, knew that when those bandages were removed, he too would have eyes of cold silver. And I saw Donovan, his body morphed almost beyond recognition, his soul trapped inside a casket of mutated flesh and growing weaker with every second. If we didn't do something soon, then he would be gone forever, a prisoner inside himself as he became a monster, a black suit. It took me a while to notice that I wasn't alone in my cell. Tilting my head up, I made out a familiar cloud of white that seemed to hover above me. I blinked, and it swirled into a rough shape, that of a boy sitting against the wall, knees curled up to his chin, but it didn't seem to want to focus. I knew why, and the thought of it made me wish the shape away, pray to be left alone. But my imagination was adamant that I had company.
"That's charming," Donovan's voice ebbed around the cell, or at least it ebbed around my head. "A little cosmetic surgery and you can't even stand to look at your old mate."
I tucked my head into my arms, screwed my eyes closed, but he was still there.
"Not laughing at my jokes anymore either, I see."
"They've killed you," I said, speaking the words aloud even though I knew I didn't need to.
"Whoa!" he shouted back. "Not yet, they haven't. I'm still in there somewhere. I just look a little different, that's all."
His voice became urgent.
"Don't give up on me yet, Alex."
"I won't," I said, sitting up and staring at the blurred shape, a figure on the other side of frosted glass. "I'm not. I made you a promise. I'll get you out."
"Good kid, because I really didn't look too hot back there."
"I don't know. It's more effective than going to the gym," I replied with a twitch of a smile. The image seemed to solidify for a moment, its chest exploding outward, stomach hardening to a grotesque cluster of cramped muscles, one leg swollen up like a victim of elephantitis. Donovan's eyes glinted back, half metal and half moonlight, and he flexed his arms.
"You got a point there," he said. "Hope they do my arms too, though, or I'm going to be as lopsided as your new mate Simon."
"Yeah, he's got a pretty unique look." We laughed, but it was forced. Donovan's body deflated like a balloon, returning to its original size. It didn't stop there, continuing to shrink as the hallucination spoke.
"Find a way, Alex. Get us the hell out of here."
"What if I can't?" I asked the figure, now nothing more than a thread of light that hung from the invisible ceiling like a spider's web.
"You can," was all it said. Then it was gone.
I wasn't feeling too positive about escaping, but some part of my mind seemed to be holding out hope. Somewhere deep inside my subconscious, I must have had faith in myself. And why not? I mean, I had found a way out of Furnace. Okay, it hadn't got us very far, but we'd got out of Gen Pop. We'd beaten it. I tried to remember how I'd felt standing on the lip of the chasm in Room 2, the rock still smoking, the river raging beneath us like our own private expressway home. For all we knew, we were about to die, but we'd done it. We'd cracked the prison open like an egg, and for that moment at least, we'd been free. The memory of those feelings was still there, a faint and insubstantial ghost of an emotion rather than the real thing, but I could still taste it. I wanted it again. I wanted to be standing on the edge of freedom, knowing that all it would take to get out was one simple step. And I would find a way. I swore to myself right then and there that I would split the prison open once again, and that this time there would be no doubts, no uncertainty about our fate. There would only be the outside world and us in it, drenched in sunlight and warmth and gulping down burgers by the beach. "You've got me started now," I said to the empty space where Donovan had been, imagining chunks of salty beef and thick mayo and moist bread and burnt onion sliding down my throat, the wind in my hair and the sound of gulls as they dived for our scraps. Oh yes, I'd do it. The next time Simon came, I'd find our way out. Only Simon didn't come. I waited patiently, so patiently, counting the seconds as they passed, the minutes, then the hours. At one point, I heard footsteps again and got myself ready, hoping that the hatch would open and Simon's face would appear. But they passed overhead and vanished. I kept counting, rocking my head back and forth with each passing beat to try to keep track of the time. It was just about the most monotonous thing I'd ever done in my life, but it kept my mind busy, kept the bad thoughts away. And I was counting towards something. I knew it wouldn't be long before the kid reappeared. At least I thought I knew. I lost count at somewhere over 15,000, thrown off stride by the sound of Z from the next cell. I calculated the time even as I decoded his message, the clank of his grill against the pipe knocking out even more seconds. 4 hours. It had seemed like 40. "Think D's okay?" he asked. I wondered why he waited so long to get in touch. Maybe he'd been asleep. "He will be," I banged back, the wounds on my hand opening up again as the grill smashed against the toilet. "When we're out." "Hope so," came Z's reply. "You okay?" "Just dandy," I struck, laughing as I did so. "Waiting for Simon." There was a pause. Then the muted metallic thud started up again. "Suppose he's been caught?" I'd been trying not to consider that possibility. Of all of us, Simon was the most at risk, spiriting through the passageways of Furnace's underbelly where the black suits or the Wheezers or the Warden could find him at any time, then retreating to whatever hole he found, praying that the rats didn't sniff him out. Like he'd said, his life was in danger every time he came to release us. I was amazed he'd lasted as long as he had. "He'll be back," I replied eventually, ignoring my own doubts. "Won't be long." But it was. I started the count from scratch. 3,600 seconds in every hour. 3,600, 7,200, 10,800. After which I drifted off, dreaming of Donovan in the infirmary screaming numbers at me as if they were a combination to unlock the restraints that held him. The sound of the hatch woke me and I sat up, my heart lifting, waiting for Simon to appear. But the door didn't open. Something was scratching at the lever. Something with claws rather than fingers. Something that panted and growled as it tried to dig its way to me. It was a rat, all bloody claws and lamprey mouth. I scrabbled for the scalpel, luck letting me grab it by the handle as I shot to my feet. There was a thump, the thick metal hatch buckling inward a fraction. Another impact, another dent. It wasn't much, but I knew the door couldn't withstand an onslaught like this for long. I prayed for the black suits to appear, to shoot the thing that was trying to get in, but I soon regretted it. The sound of scratching became the unmistakable racket of a scuffle, a grunt followed by a scream. And then a crunch as something else slammed onto the hatch. I stood there, scalpel by my side, fear for my life the only thing keeping me upright. I heard the lever grinding open, then the hatch was ripped outward. For a fraction of a second, I thought I saw the outline of Simon, the pinpricks of his eyes so bright they looked like holes in his head where the light was streaming through. Then the outline lashed out, catching me around the head with its club fist. Fireworks exploded in front of my eyes and my legs gave out. That probably saved my life. The rat lunged into my cell, its clawed arms like some living combine harvester that churned the air. I curled up as tightly as I could, hands over my head, the scalpel dropped and lost. Warm spit and a retching growl dripped down on me and I waited for the next blow, the one that would finish me. But it never came. Instead, I heard the throb of thunder, the booming laugh of a black suit.
"What do you think?"
came the voice, so thick, so powerful that it cut right through the squeals of the rat. I risked a look up, saw the creature halfway into my cell, its mouth so wide that its jaw looked dislocated, rows of teeth like broken glass embedded in its gums. It saw me watching it and lunged again, but something was holding it back, a fist locked tight around its throat. My eyes drifted past the thrashing beast, saw the immaculate suit beyond, the shark's grin. The black suit loosened his grip, and the rat sank deeper, its claws so close I could smell them, like trash left too long in the sun.
"No one would ever know,"
the black suit went on, pulling the rat back, then dropping it in again.
"Everyone knows the vermin like to get in the cells, help themselves to some fresh meat. This one would have had you already if I hadn't come along."
The rat tried to squirm around, biting at the gloved hand that held it. The black suit simply bunched up his other fist and struck out, the blow causing the creature's head to snap back, blood dripping. It shook itself, obviously stunned, then resumed its efforts to reach me.
"So, should I drop it in? Let you get to know each other? Who knows, you might have been friends already up in Gen Pop."
More laughter, like a storm was raging above my cell. The black suit lowered the rat even further, and I felt a searing heat on my arm where its claws had drawn blood. There was a snap like a bear trap inches from my ear as its jaws closed in. Then it was gone, hauled out of the hatch back into the corridor. I peered up through trembling fingers, saw the black suit wedge his shotgun into the rat's waist and pull the trigger. The corridor flashed for a second, the lightning once more followed by a dull rumble.
"The warden wants you left alone for a month,"
the guard said, leaning over the opening.
"But he doesn't call all the shots around here. Next time, you might not be so lucky."
He kicked the hatch shut. For once, I was thankful for the darkness, which hid the crimson beads that pattered like gentle rain to the floor of my cell. Lost Boys. I'm not ashamed to say that I almost lost it after that. Lying there, the echo of the shot still gunning through my skull, the sting of the rat's claws making my arm pound, the grin of the black suit as he dangled my own death over me seared into my light-starved retinas, I felt myself start to unravel. I could picture my body unwinding into threads, then flooding down the pipe into the toilet with all the other waste. I know it seems strange that I was thinking about death with the same anticipation and hunger with which I was clinging to life only hours earlier. But the two were one and the same right then. My existence was a living hell, fraught with the knowledge that the hatch could be opened at any time and my nightmares would climb inside with me, and death promised a new life. Whether it was in the afterlife my mum had always told me about, or as a ghost wandering furnace for all eternity, or even just the wonderful oblivion of nothingness, it meant freedom. And now I had the means to get there. A shudder passed through my body as I realized what I had thought. But it was difficult to ignore the obvious. I mean, something had made me take that scalpel, even knowing that I could never hope to use it as a weapon against the legion of giants and gas masks that dwelled down here. Maybe a part of me, a part so far inside me I could barely hear it, knew the real reason I'd want a blade in my cell. and it would be so easy. Two clean cuts and I'd be out of here. I'd have my escape route. No more guards, no more Weezers, no more Warden. No more responsibility for saving Z and Donovan and Simon. I smiled, picturing the next black suit to come and torment me as he realized I was free, that I'd slipped out from right between his fingers. Yeah, because you'll really be showing them, won't you? Talk about cutting up your wrists to spite your fate. Where had that come from? It hadn't sounded like me, or like Donovan for that matter. I wondered how many voices there were living in my head, and how they could all have such different opinions. Not that I wasn't grateful. If it hadn't been for that chirruped burst of sarcasm somewhere in my subconscious, then maybe I would have just picked up that scalpel again and finished the job. Instead, I located the blade with my fingertips and pushed it across the cell. It hit the lip of my toilet pipe and stopped, as if imploring me to think about what I was doing. But I was, and with a prod I sent it tumbling toward the sewage below. I know, I should have kept it. It was a weapon, and however small it was, it could have at least given me the element of surprise if I found myself in a skirmish. But you have to believe me when I say that down here, that blade was the closest thing to the exit key I had, and sooner or later I would have used it. Dumping the scalpel seemed to take some of the weight off my shoulders, although the fear was still perched on my chest like a demon. What had happened with the black suit and the rat hammered home once again how vulnerable I was here. And there was still no sign of Simon. For the first time since I'd been thrown in the hole, the bad hallucination started. I saw a figure start to form from the strands of gossamer, strung web-like across my cell, and somehow I knew it wasn't going to be Donovan this time. I was right. Neither was it my old friends and family, who would have been welcome even if they were screaming at me with hatred and anger and sadness. It wasn't even the freaks of Furnas. No, this was something else, something I couldn't quite identify. A figure shrouded in black who sat on the fringe of my vision and shifted whenever I tried to focus on it. It didn't do anything. Didn't say anything, just sat and stared at me, like it was waiting for me to die. I felt panic grab hold of my guts, and I swung around, the figure always one step ahead of me. I slapped the walls in frustration, then started punching them, imagining that the hooded creep was laughing at me, urging me on. I was yelling at it, swearing at the top of my voice, challenging it to show itself. But the angel of death, because I knew that's what it was, hung back, content to watch me suffer. Eventually, I must have passed out, vertigo sucking me up like a tornado, the cell spinning. I cracked my head as I fell, knowing even in the pitch black that my vision was failing. I waited to drop from this waking nightmare right into a cruel dream, but it seemed that my mind had grown tired of tormenting me, switching everything off and letting me rest in peace, if you'll excuse the expression. I don't know how long I was out for, but it took the sound of my hatch being unlocked to wake me. I didn't even bother to sit up, too exhausted to try to escape my fate. But when the door swung open, it was Simon I saw in the dull light. He grinned lopsidedly, then offered me a hand.
Miss me?
We ran silently along the corridor, Simon taking the lead and Z and I treading on his shadow. I asked him where he'd been, and he shut me up with a steely look, glancing nervously at the deserted passageways.
"Got to be quiet,"
he whispered as we reached the T-junction that split off toward the infirmary.
"Black suits everywhere."
I bit my tongue, saving my questions for later. We turned left, and for a minute I thought we were heading back toward Donovan. But although we slowed down as we passed the plastic curtain, we didn't stop. Doors flashed by, gaping black mouths in the red walls, and I could make out voices from inside, more than one. Deep chuckles, guttural snarls, and at one point even a high-pitched, tuneless song that sent shivers up my spine. We reached another junction, One I didn't remember from before, even though we must have passed it the day we were first dragged to the hole. I glanced right and felt something inside me run cold, as if I just stepped into a freezer. There was nothing there. Nothing I could see, anyway. The stretch of barren stone was deserted, but all the same, something seemed to hang in the air, a dark presence that tried to hook itself into my soul as we ran past.
"Warden's quarters," Simon hissed in explanation. Then he turned left, and the feeling vanished. I glanced back once as we sprinted the other way, invisible eyes boring into my back from the ever-growing shadows behind us. Two more openings, one on either side of the corridor. No sign of life from inside. Then we reached the massive vault door that separated the prison's underbelly from the caverns beyond. It still hung off its hinges like a broken limb, its thick surface pocked and scratched. Simon motioned for us to stop, edging around the corner and flashing his silver eyes into the cave beyond. I could tell from the way his grey face was suddenly illuminated that the spotlights were on. But there was obviously nothing else there, as after a moment or two the kid darted off again. I followed, keeping my head low as we entered the huge cavern where we'd been caught. It was empty save for the lights, and we cut right across it, past the tunnel where Z and I had thought we'd seen sunlight, toward the far end. Here, the ceiling drooped as if unable to hold up the vast weight above it, leaving a crack between its jagged edge and the floor that was too narrow for even the halogen beams to penetrate.
"Hurry," Simon hissed, grabbing my arm and steering me toward the ugly strip of darkness.
He glanced behind him, and I thought I saw movement from another of the fractured corridors that led from the cavern.
"Suits," Simon explained. "They patrol around here. Hurry."
I ducked under the uneven lip of the ceiling, finding myself in a small pocket of air surrounded on all sides by rock and jagged piles of rubble. I wasn't sure where to go, but Z was soon in, and Simon too, and the bigger kid began to scramble up the wall opposite, vanishing into the gloom.
"Where are you going?" Z asked. "I can't see a thing."
"Just follow me. It's easier than it looks."
He was right. The wall was full of cracks we could wedge our feet into and hooked lumps that served as handholds. The higher we climbed, the darker it got, but it was easy enough to feel our way ahead. After a good 10 minutes or so of slow progress, the acoustics of the space changed, and soon after that the wall leveled out. Simon grabbed me, pulled me up the last little bit, and while I waited for Z, I tried to get a better sense of where we were. That's when I heard the noise up ahead. A click that could have been the chattering of teeth or the dry voice of some giant insect.
"You hear that?"
I asked, wondering how fast I could get back down the wall if I had to make a quick exit. It was so dark I couldn't even work out where we'd climbed.
"It's okay," Simon called from the shadows. "They're with us."
"They?" He took hold of my overalls and guided me forward, steering me gently around a post of rock before angling sharply right. We'd taken a few more twisted turns before I heard the spark of a match. The world flared, and I was shocked to see a pair of frightened faces only a few paces ahead. They scattered back like startled mice.
"It's me," Simon said, his voice louder but still cautious. "I brought him. Them."
There was a soft pop and a flashlight fluttered on, the light weaker and more uncertain than the match in Simon's hand. We were standing in a small cave, barely larger than one of the cells up top. The ceiling arched above us. There were two other kids in the space, their bodies so hunched and distorted that they looked for a moment like crude paintings on the wall. One stared at us with silver eyes as large as saucers, while the other, the younger, blinked at me through pools of watery blue. I thought I recognized him from Furnace, one of the kids who'd been taken during the Blood Watch, dragged off by the Weezers. The boy with the silver eyes ducked his head, and I saw that he was eating something, gnawing at it with animal ferocity.
My stomach seemed to turn itself inside out with excitement at the thought of food, until the splintered bone caught the lamplight and my stomach turned for a different reason. "Is that?" I asked, pointing. Simon followed my outstretched finger, his stance suddenly becoming defensive.
"We have to eat,"
he snapped, but his face twisted into a mask of shame before dropping to the floor.
"You, Alex?"
asked the kid with the blue eyes. As far as I could tell, he'd escaped the Weezer's blades. His overalls were rust-coloured in places, but other than that, he just looked like he'd stepped from his cell in Gen Pop.
"I remember you. You used to hang with Carl Donovan, right?"
I nodded, unsure what to say.
"And you can cut us out,"
said the figure in the middle of the room. Like Simon, he'd been cut open and stitched back up, although only his torso was affected, a bloated sack from which skinny limbs stuck out like spider legs. This time I didn't respond. The kid shuffled forward as if to get a better look at me.
"We heard the black suits after you escaped. Man, they were pissed."
His throaty laugh was contagious, spreading to the blue-eyed kid and to Simon.
"Alex, Z, meet Pete."
The mutilated teenager nodded a welcome.
"He used to be a skull, but he's okay now."
"Better than ever,"
Pete said, laughing again.
"The kid there is Ozzy."
I smiled uneasily at them both as Pete continued to grind his teeth down on whatever it was he was eating. It was good to see some friendly faces, but part of me had been hoping that Simon commanded an army up here, a band of 50 kids or something who were ready to storm out of Furnace. This ragtag bunch of children didn't look capable of escaping from the cave we were in, let alone fighting their way to the surface. Not that I could talk, I suppose. I don't know what they'd been expecting of me, but right now I looked like a walking skeleton only held together by the tattered remnants of my overalls.
"How have you survived down here?" Z asked. "Why haven't the black suits found you?"
"They would have," Simon answered, picking up an upturned IV bag from the floor and offering it to me.
It was full of clear water, probably from the river, and I drank deeply, the cool liquid putting out a fire in my gut that I hadn't even noticed was raging until now. I passed it to Z as Simon continued.
"The dogs have followed our scent a few times, but there's no way they could get up that wall. The suits neither. They probably just think they're picking up a rat's trail."
"Getting pretty bored, though,"
said Pete.
"It's been what, a few months at least?"
"Just weeks for me," said Ozzy. "Feels longer, though. Glad you're here. You know a way out?"
I shook my head, and sensing my discomfort, Simon slapped me on the shoulder.
"Not yet, he doesn't. But I know exactly where to start."
The steeple. Ozzy came with us as we crossed the cave, exiting through a narrow cleft at the back. Pete did his best, but he had barely taken a couple of paces on his wasted legs before they crumpled.
"Damn them,"
he said with another forced laugh as he passed the torch to Simon.
"They could have at least given me the limbs to match this body."
"You wait here, keep an ear out," Simon said over his shoulder, taking the lamp and pressing on. "We won't be long."
"Is there a way out up here?"
Z asked as we shuffled sideways along a passage that was barely big enough for any of us. It sloped down, sometimes so sharply that I thought I was going to tumble into the darkness below.
"We're not sure," Simon replied. "I've searched all these tunnels, trust me. Been through them again and again and again. Tried every crevice, every hole, every damn shadow in the ceiling. Nothing. They're all dead ends, blocked by rock falls, or they just plummet straight down. But then we found the steeple."
"Steeple?" I asked, sliding on a carpet of loose stones and clinging onto the wall to stay upright.
"I called it that," came Ozzy's voice, muffled by the shadows. "Reminded me of a church."
The flickering light from Simon's torch did little to pick out the route ahead, which seemed to close up the farther we walked as though it was trying to force us back. Just to help ward off the fear, I kept the conversation flowing. "So how long were you in Furnace?" I asked, directing the question forward, but it was the younger kid behind me who answered again.
"Just a year," he said, then laughed. "I say just, it felt like a lifetime. Got sent down for murder after my parents were killed. Not by me, I might add."
"Black suits?" I asked.
"Yeah, black suits. Framed me."
"Same here," I said. "I'm supposed to have murdered my best friend. What about the others?"
"Guilty as charged. Pete got locked up during the summer of slaughter with the skulls and all. Doesn't really say much about it. Simon, well, he'll tell you."
"Thanks."
Simon's sarcasm echoed off the walls as he tried to squeeze through a crack in the rock. He vanished with a pop, his voice filtering back with the weak light.
"Yeah, I was an idiot. The gang fights had finished, but me and my mates got locked up for hitting a jewelry store. Things got out of hand. The owners had a gun."
His voice faded as he walked off, and I sucked in my breath to press myself through the gap.
"The guy threatened to use it. We fought. The gun went off and the rest, as they say, is history. Watch where you walk."
We'd emerged into another vast cavern. Simon's voice suddenly swallowed by the immense weight of darkness. His lamp revealed that we were on a narrow ledge, which dipped away into an ocean of pitch that seemed to have no end. The wall we'd come through stretched up, the dark canvas above us like the night sky and just as cold. The jutting rock narrowed as it climbed, like a needle, like a spire.
"Well, this is it,"
said Simon, gazing up at the invisible ceiling far above our heads.
"That's it,"
Z said, emerging from the hole and brushing the dust from his overalls.
"That's our way out."
Simon flashed another defiant look our way, but it didn't last, and after a second his face fell. I wasn't sure what he wanted from me, from us, but I didn't see anything that resembled a way out. There wasn't even a glimmer of hope in my mind. It was just another cavern, and a pillar of rock that stretched toward nothing.
"It's all we've got," said Ozzy as he joined us. "Don't look like much, I know, but it's the only part of this whole system that goes any higher. Like Simon said, all the tunnels dead end or go deeper, but this one looks like it could stretch up to the top."
There was no way of telling. The light from the lamp clawed its way maybe 10 meters into the heavy shadow, but there it stalled.
"I think this is part of the gorge, the one they put the prison in,"
explained Simon, holding the lamp above his head but failing to illuminate any more of the steeple.
"It could lead to the surface."
"Ever seen any sunlight up there?" I asked, knowing the answer already.
"No, but that doesn't mean there isn't any."
Simon shifted his gaze to the chasm at our side, as deep as the space above us was high.
"It has to be, Alex, because there's no other way out."
"Even if it was, how would we get up there?" asked Z. "We'd need ropes, spikes. Nobody would be able to make that climb bare-handed."
The mood was sinking fast, and the darkness seemed to sense it, pressing down on us.
"We could climb it,"
Simon said, unwilling to give up. He sounded like the child he was, almost stamping his foot to emphasize the point.
"Anyway, you're here now. You can help us find a way out. Come up with something. You did it before."
The rock of the steeple was rough and cracked, like the slope we'd climbed a moment ago, and there were splits that looked big enough to rest on. But Z was right. It would take someone at the peak of their physical ability to scale the steeple, which none of us could claim to be right now. And even if we got there, reached the top, who's to say it wouldn't just end at the cavern roof, leaving us stranded on a rocky pillar with no way down?
I realized everyone was looking at me and that I was shaking my head. "I'll think about it," was all I could find to say. "There might be a way. If one of us could scout it, maybe. Take a rope? I don't know." I could hear the doubt dripping from my voice, but for Simon, the mere mention of an idea seemed enough. He grinned, and for a moment I thought he was going to throw his hulking body forward and hug me.
"I knew you'd be up for it," he said. "It doesn't even matter if we all can't make it. Like, I can't see Pete getting up there with his legs, you know. If just one of us can get out, we can find some help."
I stared up again, and for a moment I could see it, the steeple pushing relentlessly toward the surface, the ancient rock breaking through the crust of the earth and leaving enough room for us. I imagined my hand pushing through the loose soil, gripped by sunlight, which pulled me out from my grave, laid me down on the warm grass.
"See, you feel it too," said Simon,
and I realized my cheeks were aching from the grin they were holding up.
"There's something about this place. I come here sometimes, lie on the ledge and look up, pretend that it's the night sky up there. Sometimes it's so real I can see the stars, feel the breeze. It's got to be our way out."
His last word was snapped off early, and he tilted his head, listening to something I couldn't hear. Then he walked past me, back to the wall.
"Come on, it's pretty safe here, but the rats will home in on any sound, and I don't fancy being stuck on this ledge if they show up."
"We're staying with you, right?" I asked his misshapen back as he vanished. "In the cave?"
"No, we need to get you to your cells."
C and I protested with the same cry of alarm, but he was still talking.
"If you go missing, then the black suits will start to suspect something, especially if there's no blood. Right now, they don't know anything about us, but if they come looking for you, then they might find us too. We can't take that risk."
"I don't know how much longer we're going to stay alive in there," I replied, the rock against my chest and back weakening my words. "Black suits will kill us whether the warden wants it or not."
"Just another day or so," said Simon, "till we can think of the best way to get up the steeple."
I was about to keep arguing when I realized what was going on. Simon didn't trust us, not completely anyway. He was scared we'd make a run for it, find a way out and leave them behind. And if he kept us locked up, then he knew we couldn't go anywhere without him. It seemed pretty harsh, but then Furnace doesn't exactly inspire trust.
"Why haven't you tried to climb it yet?" came Z's voice from behind me.
"I did," Simon replied. "Couple of times. Didn't get far before I started to panic. Couldn't find a way to get up there safely. Then when we heard the black suits talking about the bust up top, we figured we'd wait, see if someone actually made it out, see if we could follow them."
I heard him breathe a sigh of relief as he pushed himself out into the cave.
"Now we've got you, and I know you'll think of something. I was never bright, never did well at nothing on the outside. But you came up with the plan, blew the walls."
"Yeah, you've got to tell us how you did it," said Ozzy as we all filtered out into the tiny space.
"Another time," said Simon, walking past the expectant face of Pete. "Right now, you've got some thinking to do."
The trip back into Furnace wasn't half as easy as the trip out, and several times I found myself pleading for Simon to let us stay with him. I should have put my foot down, given the order. Yet the truth was, I was scared of him. His silver eyes were always on me, glinting as if he knew something I didn't. I couldn't help but be reminded of one of the guards, which chilled me to the bone. On top of that, I'd seen what he could do. I'd never forget the way he'd taken down that rat, then ripped out its throat, bitten it out. If he wanted, he could tear me limb from limb as easily as a black suit or one of their dogs could. And something about him, something about the intenseness of his stare, made me think he was right on the edge of sanity, that he could drop off into madness at any time and take us all down with him. Who can blame him? I thought, as we lurked in the shadows beneath the cavern's low ceiling, waiting for two distant black suits to disappear into the tunnels. Whatever I'd been through, he'd had it a million times worse. We were about to move when another guard appeared from a tunnel to our right and walked through the battered vault door, dragging a bloody corpse behind him. It left a red trail as he vanished, a crimson stream that seemed to glow in the spotlights. "Is that a rat?" I asked when the figure was gone. "Where is he taking it?"
"The incinerator, probably,"
Simon replied, his body tensing, ready to make a run for it.
"They burn them. Make sure they don't feed on each other. Make sure they don't, you know, decide they aren't dead and start roaming around again."
Both C and I looked at Simon, but he had already leaped up. I ran behind him, clumsily sprinting across the cavern floor and wishing once again that the heat on my face was daylight rather than halogen. We skidded past the vault door, following the slick trail up to the first junction. One path split off toward the warden's quarters. The feeling of dread I'd got last time I'd passed was gone, but we had to duck into a darkened room while two more black suits strolled past. My heart was pounding so high up in my throat I could taste it, but they obviously didn't suspect a thing, the military rhythm of their footsteps fading after a few seconds. A couple of cautious sprints later, and we were back at the cells. My heart dropped right from my tonsils to my stomach as soon as I saw them, but it was too late to argue. Simon held mine open like he was tucking me in, and when I was once again gripped in its smothering fist, he winked at me.
"I'll come again after your next meal, if I can. That should give us plenty of time to do this."
I reflected his expectant nod, but I couldn't bring myself to imitate his wide, too wide, grin as the hatch once again slammed shut. Breaking and entering. My next meal came a few hours after Simon had locked us back in, and when the black suit wrenched open the door and chucked in a bowl of slop, I was surprised to see the warden standing alongside him. He'd obviously come to see how I was faring in the hole, and his mere presence outside the hatch made me double over. Even then, I could feel his gaze boring into the back of my skull, transmitting images that I could make little sense of but which were always composed of a palette of reds and dirty whites. I made out a rasping laugh, each breath of which seemed to hammer the pictures deeper into my head, forcing them to take shape. Not that I could tell you what I saw. Those images were so twisted, so terrifying that they slipped right out again, each one stealing a little more of my sanity and leaving filthy traces in its place.
"Almost a week in the hole and you're still breathing,"
said the warden, although I couldn't hear his voice. I could only feel it like needles sliding into my ears. He laughed again, and it was all I could do not to scream.
"I'd save your breath, Sawyer,"
he said, as if he could read my mind.
"There's a long way to go yet, and there are so many more nightmares to face. Enjoy your food."
The warden continued to talk as the hatch was closed, but each word hurt more than the last, and I did my best to shut them out. Some filtered through, wrapped in razor wire and sinking right to the heart of my consciousness.
"Perfect subject. The chamber. Harness his fury."
Then the hatch was sealed and the voice faded. Slowly, very slowly, the poison from the warden's mind ebbed from my own, leaving me with a throbbing headache and a nosebleed. I lay on the floor, pinching the flow and trying not to think about the blood that dripped pleasantly down my throat. It had just started to ease off when I heard Z tapping a message from his cell. Think we can do it? The steeple?
No idea, I replied, sitting up to better hammer out my response. Might not even go anywhere.
Yeah, thought that too.
There was silence for a few minutes.
Worth a try, though.
Worth a try, I repeated, rubbing the blisters on my hand and wishing there weren't so many letters in the alphabet.
Any ideas? He pressed.
I didn't answer straight away. Instead, I ran my hand across the cell floor, scooping up the slop and stuffing it in my mouth, too hungry to care about where it had been or how dirty it was. To keep my mind off the texture, I tried to picture the steeple, tried to imagine how an escape might work. There was nothing to do but climb. It didn't take a genius to see that. And to do it, we'd need some equipment. Otherwise, sooner or later, we'd all take a fall, plummet past the ledge and down into the bottomless pit of the gorge. I was pretty sure there wouldn't be any climbing gear in Furnace. Not unless the Weezers liked a little recreational rappelling when they weren't working in the infirmary. The thought brought a smile to my face. I pictured them jerking and twitching as they bobbed from a ledge, their piggy eyes wide with excitement as they eased their way down, suture clamps wedged in the wall and scalpels strapped to their feet for grip.
Thank you, Brain! I sat up, feeling the familiar rush of inspiration. It was so obvious. The infirmary had been full of hooks and straps and hammers and pins that could double as a climbing kit. The euphoria was so intense that it blocked out what little rational thought I had left, banishing logic to some dark part of my brain where its protests couldn't be heard. I didn't question the fact that the equipment wasn't made for the stresses and strains of climbing and would probably break. I didn't worry that I'd never climbed before in my life. I didn't even acknowledge the thought that in order to get our hands on it, we'd have to go back into the infirmary where the Weezers were waiting. No, all I could see was us scaling the steeple with ropes of rubber tubing and leather, pulling ourselves up with forceps and bone saws until we clawed our way into the world outside. I know, it sounds utterly ridiculous, but when you've spent days inside a black hole in the center of the earth, then even the craziest escape plans become gloriously real. And I mean nothing was as crazy as filling rubber gloves with gas and using them to blow a hole in the floor, right? Simon showed up some time later, and I was telling him my plan even as he was lifting me out of my cell. He gestured for me to keep my voice down, telling me in a panicked whisper that there had been no breach or riots, and that the black suits could be anywhere.
Nice idea,
he said as we freed Z, his enthusiasm bubbling up through his caution.
We're so close. I know we can do this.
His confidence was contagious, giving us strength as we stealthily made our way down the corridor, hovering by the dark doorways for cover before sprinting down the next stretch. I wondered if we should be searching the rooms for anything we could use, but Simon shook his head.
Most are empty,
he said as he peeked around the corner of the junction that led up to the infirmary.
Shelves, boxes with nothing in them. Nothing there that will help us climb. Everything we need is in the infirmary.
He paused, and even though his features were as white as parchment, I thought they paled another shade or two.
Or beyond, where they do the surgery.
We rested, breath locked in our lungs as the sound of footsteps rose up from somewhere close. It was the tread of a black suit, and we prepared to flee back to solitary if we needed to. But they began to recede again, leaving the corridor beyond clear. Simon sprang, bolting toward the infirmary door, and we struggled to keep up with him. I was so scared that the adrenaline in my blood felt like acid. I was used to it, though. I'd forgotten what it was like to live a life where every waking moment wasn't filled with terror. We skidded to a halt outside the door, our backs pressed against the stenciled letters as Simon took a look through the plastic curtain.
Can't see any movement,
I thought I heard him say, although it was too quiet to be sure. He turned to face us.
head right, back to the screens we were in before. If you see a trolley, grab anything you think might be useful. Clamps, bandages, stuff like that.
What about the Weezers?
Z's voice fluttered past my ear.
Well, just be careful,
was his less than reassuring reply.
Get the hell out of here if there's any sign of trouble.
Simon eased a finger between two of the plastic slats and glanced inside. It must have been clear, because with a flutter, his bulbous body vanished like it was sinking into dirty pond water. I realized I'd been holding my breath and exhaled slowly through my nose. I knew if I waited any longer, my courage would desert me completely, so after snatching a mouthful of air, I pushed myself through the curtain and ducked right, sprinting behind the first screen without even checking to see if the infirmary was empty. There were no wheezed cries of alarm, no sound of shotguns being pumped and fired, no screams of anger as Z sped in, almost tumbling over the empty bed in his haste to be in hiding. All I could hear were the pitiful cries of the patients and our own gasping breaths.
"Let's go,"
said Simon, leading the way between the screen and the wall to the next compartment. This too was empty, and the half dozen or so after that, but when I followed him through one more gap, I realized it was where I'd stolen the scalpel. The boy who'd occupied the bed was now gone, sheets stripped and a stained pillow the only evidence he'd ever been there. But the trolley was still in place, the rack of stainless steel equipment glinting red in the intense light of the room.
"See, help me with these," said Simon. "Alex, you keep looking."
I nodded, grateful that he was letting me go on. Picking up equipment wasn't the only reason I'd been hoping to return to the infirmary. Donovan was up here, just two screens away. At least I prayed he was. I pushed through the next compartment a little too quickly, entering Donovan's cubicle to see the weird metal sarcophagus still in place. He was suspended inside it just as before, only now both his legs matched his grotesquely stretched torso. It was like he was slowly being filled with air, his body puffed up and his limbs swollen to bursting point. His arms, which had seemed enormous when we were up top, now looked like twigs stuck into a giant sack of dough. I walked around to face him and almost cried out. His face wasn't his anymore. I mean, I could still recognize him, but it was distended and scarred like an over-roasted pig's. His jaw was enormous, something writhing beneath the skin and making it look as if he was chewing gum. His silver eyes were those of a statue, sightless and full of death.
"Donovan," I whispered. "Are you still in there?"
It seemed a stupid thing to ask, but it's all I could come up with. It was as if someone had taken my friend and packed him inside someone else's body, pasting so much flesh over him that he could no longer remember who he was.
"Please, God, let him be in there somewhere."
"Don't get too comfortable. We're still getting out of here," I said. His head swung from side to side for a moment, like one of those toy dogs you put in cars. It would have been funny if it hadn't chilled me to the bone. I said his name again, and his gaze dropped, almost finding me, straying off to the side, then sliding back. I saw his eyes focus, then his lips peeled apart, the stitches straining as he smiled. "I stag